back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're keeping calm. We are staying local. Don Moeller is here for another Baltimore Positive conversation from Catonsville to downtown and all around. I will be doing some essential eating over at State Fair, and I'm not just getting one thing. I might get everything. You can tell Evan I'm getting the chicken and waffles. I'm getting the shrimp and grits. I'm getting the meatloaf. We have had some of those items with our next guest, and also want to give some love to Fadley's because I know Don Moeller had those Fadley crab cakes as well as Moeller and Gary Realty, and you can hear a sit-down with which parent Jeff Mueller is going to hug first when the pandemic is over. But we've had this guest over at State Fair, and, you know, he was writing a book. He's a journalist on all things national politics, as well as Lefty Giselle and Len Bias that we talked about, which feels like about a year ago because it's been almost a year. We're almost a year now into Baltimore Positive. Fraser Smith, longtime Baltimore Sun, a real journalist, joins us here in the last time we were together. I'm sure, Fraser, we thought, what were the odds of a pandemic next year? All right.
Whoever even thought about them? I mean, it's been so many years away from the big ones. It wasn't on our mind, and apparently it wasn't on our national leaders' mind either.
Yeah, on some, if they wrote about it, Fraser, or they briefed him, he certainly didn't read about it or read the briefings. We know he doesn't do that. We'll get to our president later in the segment, but
Fraser, we will.
Welcome to Baltimore Pops. I want to talk about your book because you've had so many great experiences. As Nestor said, he was a young puppy at the Sun, and you were one of the respected journalist down there, winning basically every award.
Oh, you remember when I said I was intimidated by him? I was afraid to, because he was doing stuff so important that I didn't want to bother him. I had sports writers I could bug, you know.
Yeah,
I was
Fraser
bugging Phil Jackman in the corners.
Fraser was winning big time awards all over the place. You have a storied career, and you now try to really capture the beauty of that career and the importance of journalism in a book that's available for everyone to buy called The Daily Miracle. You're locked up in your houses. You've got nothing to do. Jump on Amazon, buy The Daily Miracle. And right now our guest, Fraser Smith, is going to tell you why you should buy that book and all the good stuff that's in it. Welcome, Fraser.
Thanks a lot, Don and Nestor. It's really good to be with you.
Well, it was better when we were at State Fair and there was no pandemic and we could, like, hug each other and tell old stories. But, I mean, just diving into this, where my career and the beginning of my career in the 80s and your career intersects is I've stood in front of people at various press gatherings, and Don was a press director, always trying to, you know, move the narrative in this, you know, we're not going to talk about the dead bodies, we're going to talk about something else, you know. And obviously this week, the President of the United States has said, well, I'm not going to talk about the dead bodies. I'm not going to talk about my role in any of this. We're going to talk about how guilty you are, Fraser Smith. You're a bad man. You're a third-rate journalist. You're fake news. Now, I've had Peter Angelos accuse me of that, and I'm sure along your pathway you've gotten sideways with various politicians, probably editors as well. But where we are now in the narrative of what journalism is and what you've written this book on and what you and I were expected to do, really charged by our employer down on Calvert Street, as well as the people and the sponsors and everyone, which was get to the truth, you know, get to the truth. We're having a hard time doing that, aren't we?
Well, it's being made more difficult by people that are supposedly running our country, we're one of the major, if not the major, conduit of information. Of course, I'm talking about all of media, not just newspapers, but electronic media as well. And we ought to be a big part of what's going on here. And instead of using us in ways that he should, he is casting abuse on us as if we were against informing people of what a serious situation we're in.
Well, Fraser, tie it all back. I'm really going to put my feet up here and just enjoy, really, you sort of giving us the four dummies version of the Daily Miracle. Tell us where the idea for the book came from, how it ties into your personal experience, and the narrative you're trying to tell in this book.
Well, Don, one of the major ideas that drove me to do this was the feeling that even as much as people realize the news gathering aspect of what newspapers do and did, it was important to recognize, as fewer people do recognize, the other things that newspapers did in cities like Baltimore. I mean, we really were, and in Providence, Rhode Island, where I worked, and in Jersey City, New Jersey, where I worked, newspapers were institutions. I mean, we were very involved, for example, in things like the choosing of leaders. The Baltimore Sun used to interview everybody that ran for the legislature and, of course, the city council. But they did this year after year. They did it generationally. And there were people on the newspapers who followed careers so that we knew who was promising and responsible and honest and smart. And so we endorsed those people, and often they were chosen by the voters. And often we were the only information that people had. And we had it not just for the previous year, but going back generations. So when you don't have that, where do you turn for people that you can trust and that you want to have responsibility for doing the important public work? I mean, we have seen the importance of that recently in Baltimore with Mayor Pugh, who was as some of us, maybe many of us know, making a lot of money off a book that had been purchased for reasons that I think will always be somewhat unclear. For lots of money, and nobody knew anything about this. And in investigating what she was doing, it was discovered that there were a lot of other people who sat on this nonprofit board who were making a lot of money because of their relationship with the University of Maryland Hospital System. It was an enormous story. That what would that same story have come out if there were no newspapers? I think it's reasonable to say it's doubtful.
Well, Catherine Pugh might still be running the city right now. And, you know, this week, Don, I know you saw this as well, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And, you know, when I think of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, I think of all the ties with the Baltimore Ravens back in the 90s when all the stories went down and, you know, Art was moving the team here, and how, you know, both of those newspapers moved the national story for all the news that went on around, which really became the centerpiece of everything I ever did in my career last 25 years, the football team. And now the Cleveland Plain Dealer is four reporters, and it is literally all but gone. The New Orleans Times Picayune, and certainly, you know, through the situation with Katrina down there, which is now a decade and a half ago, it seems crazy, but that newspaper went to every other day and is essentially sort of half dark. And where we are with what the Sun is and what the Sun could have been and what it might be. And we had Ted Vettitolis on right before all of this talking about, he's been rumored to buy it forever and ever and ever. But I do wonder, and I really wonder this out loud all the time, and Don and I, we always disagree about this, but these newspapers are generally supported by local business. And when local business gets a bad crab cake review, or when the newspaper goes after the friend of the cousin of the business owner who's down the street, who's the neighbor, who's politically aligned, that newspapers have to be strong and be tough and be fair and be all of that. I think that's a very hard thing in the modern era to find support for that, not only through subscription, but more than that, through the business community that then makes itself vulnerable to being perhaps more transparent than they really want to be.
You know, the newspaper business has gone through various iterations of ownership. And in many cities, including Baltimore, primarily because that's what we're talking about, the private ownership of the newspaper, because it was such a flourishing business, the ownership was able to maintain its independence for decades, and became famous for that. And we all were grateful for the fact that we had an opportunity to work there, and to know that it was just the work we did that would be in the paper. And that, and there's a story that I tell in the book about an automobile dealer who decided he wasn't going to advertise with the Sun anymore because he didn't like the consumer journalism that we were doing.
So that, Nestor, you talk about that all the time.
And it's, and what happened was that the owner of the auto business came in and withdrew his ads, and the then publisher of the paper said, well, do what you have to do. And 30 days later, after the guy began to feel the impact of not advertising in the paper, he came back and said, okay, I'm coming back to you now. And the publisher said, well, you know, right now we just really don't have any space. Whether that was true or not, we don't think it was. And he
always more space for an ad, Frazier. I worked there. Come on.
Sure. Well, he let the guy kind of twist in the wind for 30 days, and then said, "Well, come on back if you want to." But that's the way that's the way we did business then. And I think pretty much that's the way they're doing it now. But it's more and more difficult because the economic model of newspapers was destroyed by the internet. You know, all the ads that we used to get, and when we were really flourishing, are online now. So there's that problem. That's a really that's an existential problem.
Frazier, where does the title, The Daily Miracle, for folks just joining in, we're with longtime Sun columnist, YPR government reporter, Frazier Smith, award-winning Frazier Smith, whose latest book is The Daily Miracle. Really talking about the importance of journalism in our society. Frazier, where does the title, The Daily Miracle, come from?
Well, there are two parts to it, actually. The first one is that newspapers really were heavy industry. I mean, you had fleets of trucks to deliver the paper. You had enormous presses that were, I would say, put together by artists. That's the way I felt about them. They were so determined that their product would shine every day. You didn't want to get in their way, and so there was that. There was some miracle working going on there, but it was also happening in the newsroom. I mean, you had a lot of really smart, exacting people who were determined that every day the paper would be as error-free as it possibly could be. But the room itself was run by individuals who were very jealous of what they were doing and determined for it to be as good, as I was saying before, as it could possibly be. So inevitably there would be conflict that would get resolved because the paper did have to come out every day. But you had that kind of tension that was always there, and sometimes it was more of a problem than it usually was. So sometimes we would call it the Daily Miracle. Sometimes we actually were saying it with some fondness for everybody, and sometimes you were a little unhappy with somebody.
Well, Frazier, as a guy that tried to get everything right when I worked there and I was a young man, I was in charge of the daily lottery numbers on the scoreboard page,
right.
And I can assure you that a 12 is not a 13 when it comes to lotto balls. When I got called into Jack Lemmon's office because I got the lottery numbers wrong and someone thought they won $1 million who didn't. And I would say that of all the things we do, and every restaurant's trying to get every piece of fish right, every chicken right, you know, that there's a safety issue for everything. But certainly from a newspaper perspective, and this really jaded me my whole life, and part of it was having a tough teacher like Don Moeller, is wanting to dot every I, cross every T, you know, every comma needs to be in the right. There was something about being involved on that side of being in the newspaper business that made you a perfectionist, right? Like, just because you were surrounded by a bunch of English teachers who, and I always say prickfectionist, you know? I mean, just, it had to be perfect every day or we'll chase it and we'll get it right, right?
Well, it had to be your objective, and it was everybody's objective, and if you made mistakes, they showed up in the newspaper the next day. It was taken very seriously because often the mistakes were tiny. But of course, if you get the lottery number incorrectly, that's going to have reverberations.
Yeah, those were really bad mornings for the 19 and 20-year-old version of Nestor Frazier, as you can imagine, on the fifth floor on Calvert Street. Frazier Smith is here. The Daily Miracle is the book, a memoir of newspapering and a man after my own heart. All I ever wanted to do was die a broken-down version of Oscar Madison, and you understand that, Don Mohler. You had a little of that in you, too, right? Didn't you want to be a journalist?
I do understand that, and Nestor, you're so fond of saying that everything really is about telling stories. And with that, Frazier, I turn to you and I say, when you had the idea for a Daily Miracle, there was a story that you wanted to tell, that you wanted your readers to become familiar with. What's the story in the Daily Miracle? What's behind the Daily Miracle? What do you want us to know?
Well, I want you to know that what you're losing, and it will be something of a miracle if you don't, I hate to say, but what I would like people to, really at this point, to some extent my book is an obituary for something that was put together over decades, was practiced every day until it got as airtight as it could be. And just in terms of the people that did the work that you saw every day, were very good people. I mean, early in my career, somebody said to me, if you stay in this business, you'll meet some of the absolutely best people that you're ever going to meet in your life. And I found that to be absolutely true. I'm sure that a lot of people can say the same thing, but given the fact that we have a leader who is calling us enemies of the people, I felt like newspapers. I mean, just look at the papers that you read today. They're not taking any time or space to defend themselves against the president, although he is teaching them something more about the truth, I would say. But I just thought people really ought to know, because of the fact that what I just said is true, which is that we're not defending ourselves. It's nobody ever does that in the newspaper business. It's taking away from effort you ought to be giving to the news itself, and most newspapers, the Times and the Post, the Wall Street and the papers that are still surviving, they still operate under those precepts, and it's very important to do that. But I was in a position, because I'm not working for a paper anymore, to say all of these things and to bring a little bit of credibility along with me. And so I had an opportunity to do it, and I could also talk about, you know, really how much fun the whole thing was, and how close we could get to the important people stories. You know, Don, I mean, you know, politics has been important to both of us, but sometimes it's always seemed to me that the soul of the paper was in the stories we wrote about people who nobody would ever know about if we didn't do it. And that's going to continue to be the case, because it's going to be, newspapers going to have to cover what's really important in front of them.
And, well, I think of you, Frazier, I think of you, it's so interesting. You covered, we chatted about it before, and in the current context, it's impossible to not think about this, but you covered and wrote really a definitive biography about one of the legendary American politicians and former mayor and governor, William Donald Schaefer. And I talk a little bit about how Schaefer interacted with the press, because certainly he wasn't the easiest personality in the world. So talk to Nestor and me a little bit about, as a reporter, how you had to cover Schaefer and how you interacted with him.
Well, Schaefer was difficult to cover, and he could be threatening in his way. Almost every politician I ever covered would be unhappy with something sometime. And some people understood the relationship better than others. Schaefer understood it deeply because just like we were wanting to be accurate as we could be, he wanted to use us to put his various programs and ideas in front of people. He knew that, we were important to him. So, I mean, as much as he might scowl and be unhappy with us, he never threw us out of his office. But we used to have breakfast with him sometimes. And, you know, it became clear that what he wanted for breakfast was an Egg McMuffin. And if he didn't get it, you know, maybe the whole thing couldn't go forward. But again, he wouldn't let anything get to that point because we were his conduit. We were the ones that were going to put his ideas and his programs and the spending that he wanted to do in front of people. And so, you know, there was that kind of balance and comedy between, I don't mean comedy, but, you know, understanding and partnership. We never thought we were his PR department, but in fact, you know, in the most honest and professional way, we were. I mean, you know, we're the ones that covered stories like, you know, was he really going to swim with the seals in the seal pool? Well, we don't know. This is what City Hall would say. We don't know if he's going to do that or not, but we saw him modeling suits the other day, so maybe that is what he's going to do.
Well, I mean, in the modern era where we are, and last time we got together, one of the reasons we founded Baltimore Positive 2 years ago was to say, who's going to be the next mayor? Where is the city going? That was before Catherine Pugh was going to jail. That was before a pandemic. That was before a maniac took over the country. There's been a lot that's happened even in the 10 or 11 months since we departed with you. I think we were together with you in June of last year, pretty early on in Baltimore Positive, and now we're to this point where the election would have been next week. It's not going to be, and now we're moving that back, and there's mail-in and all of these things, and yet we still have this city where Jack Young's running it, Brandon Scott would like to be running it, and then there's other folks who've been joining us from Mary Miller and Thoreau and DJ and candidates, and Sheila Dixon's been on with us a couple times. We're going to have a real election here, I think, in the middle of this pandemic, and we're going to come out of this with at least a Democratic candidate at some point a few weeks from now. But this isn't the first or second or third or fourth thing on anybody's mind in Baltimore right now. On the minds of a lot of people is where their next meal's coming from. I've been on the phone fighting with my bank about PPP and where's the $1,200 and who's got a job and how many of my sponsors. We all have a mess on our hands, but this election's going to happen. And I don't know if it's going to happen in darkness, but it's not going to happen in full light the way that maybe every citizen here would like for it to, because it's really important, right, Fraser?
Absolutely. Of course it is. The importance of it is spelling out in front of us every day. And, of course, it is illustrating yet again the importance of the newspaper. I mean, what other media is going to give you a census tract by census tract breakdown of where the disease is? I mean, you know, who's got the capability and the space and the expertise to do that? So
now, I think, Fraser, you know, that's a nice little shout. You mentioned, you know, Pam Wood's been writing a lot about that. Obviously, we talked earlier about the Healthy Holly. You talk about the importance of these local newspapers. I mean, I have to give a shout out to Pam Wood and to Luke Broadwater as young Sun reporters who are really, I think, in the tradition of the folks that you and Nestor grew up around, really still trying, despite diminished resources, to roll their sleeves up and fight the good fight every day.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, that one of the other things that struck me about the paper as a Maryland newspaper was the editorial that they wrote recently about the Kennedy family.
Yes.
And this is the kind of thing that people who are expert in their work and are very sensitive people, I'm speaking of people in the newspaper right now, realized something that I think all of us felt, which is this family, it's a Massachusetts family, but it's a Maryland family as well. And, the grieving, the sympathy that went on after Kathleen's daughter and grandson died in the Bay. I mean, it was something that, that needed to be said, and I thought it was just almost poetic the way it was done. I really admired the paper so much for that. And again, well, again, Don, I mean, you all asked me why I wrote the book. Things like that need to somehow be saved. They need to be preserved. There needs to be a way for that kind of thinking and feeling and institutional loyalty to the reader can be preserved.
Well, the role of democracy alone right now, right, is so significant for what the circus we witnessed on Monday night, let alone what we're going to witness as more Americans die every day, Fraser.
Well, I think back to Nestor and Fraser, you know, you were mentioning that one editorial. I think back to this summer when our friend Peter Jensen wrote that incredible Sun editorial that went viral, literally, not only in the United States, but all over the world, in fighting back to the president when he attacked Baltimore City. And, you know, the Sun paper stood up for the city in a way that, that not a lot of other media can. And I think, again, when I think of your book, The Daily Miracle, we see examples of that. I think it gives us some glimmer of hope. But at the same time, I would ask you, and I know Nestor pulls his hair out every night. We decide whether we watch what's happening on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue or not. Fraser, as a seasoned reporter, and recently we've seen some of the reporters begin to really, I think, dig in and say, okay, we're just not going to be brushed aside like gnats and shouted down. And without trying to become the story, they are trying to hold their ground. And, you know, it's interesting. Nestor, you're probably not old enough. Fraser and I are. I remember back. Remember, Fraser, the moment where Nixon and Dan Rather went back and forth, and Rather got widely criticized because Nixon, I think, shouted at him, "Were you running for something?" And rather than bite his tongue, Rather shot back, "No, Mr. President, are you?" And you know that was unusual at that time. And today we've got this bizarre thing, this therapy session that happens every night. What would you do, Fraser, as a reporter, if you had that White House pass and had one of those seats every night? How would you be approaching the president?
I'd try to be as much like I've forgotten his name, but I think he asked a question of Trump that was really a fat pitch. I mean, it was
Peter Alexander.
It was an opportunity for the president to try to reassure the American people that we have the expertise and we have the incredible devotion that you see from the frontline workers to get through this. And if he had said something like that, which he apparently did say something like that the next day, I guess somebody got to him and said, "You really blew it there." Although I don't think anybody ever says that to him, but at least he did listen, and he gave the response a day later that he should have given right then. I mean, I've thought a lot about the way newspaper reporters deal with this man. And to me, the biggest difference is that we're faced with an unprecedented situation where the mental stability of the leader of the free world has been questioned by almost everybody. So that a lot of what he does and a lot of the reporting about it is different fundamentally, because there's never a time when anybody would have imagined that the country and the world would be run by somebody who exhibits the kind of behavior that he does. And so the newspaper has decided, I say that collectively, they've decided that they're going to call it what the evidence suggests it is, which is a kind of serious critical imbalance. And that never would have been done in previous times, but the facts are different now. And so what's being said about our leader is factual reporting. And I would try to be as disciplined as, I mean, I very much admired the New York Times and the Post and the Wall Street. And I think they've been very disciplined, and they've tried to, you know, keep coloring inside the lines, and I think with the exception that I just tried to explain, I think they mostly have done that. And I think in the long run, that will serve us all well.
Fraser Smith is our guest, longtime journalist, author. The book is The Daily Miracle, a memoir of newspapering. We were once colleagues, even though he doesn't remember, and I was a kid intimidated by him and writing all the Lefty Giselle stuff and all that Mayor Schaefer and then Governor Schaefer stuff. Don, are you done with Fraser? I know you keep company with Fraser from time to time. He's one of the guys you actually get together and hug often and have coffee and breakfast and whatnot. Y'all are missing your appointments. Are y'all using Zoom, right? Right, your friends. Right?
We're zooming in a little bit. We miss it. We're trying to do some things virtually, but I've had great respect for Fraser. You know, we've known each other for a long time, both when he was at the Sun and at WYPR. He covered my bosses. He covered me. And again, I just think for folks who are interested and have a love of journalism and recognize the importance of a free press in the United States of America, you really need to run to Amazon right now. I know you can't run to the bookstore. Run to Amazon, order The Daily Miracle. I think you'll find it enjoyable. It's a great read. And Fraser, thanks for coming on, and hopefully we can have you back on in the future just to talk politics.
I'd welcome it any time. Thank you guys very much.
Fraser, I'm going to say the same thing to you that I've said to everybody. I enjoyed getting together with you the last time more because it involved food and camaraderie and looking at you. Hopefully the next time we get together, we can be in person. Always a pleasure. Fraser Smith joining us here. See Fraser Smith, The Daily Miracle, a memoir of newspapering. You want to go check that out. Don and I are doing Baltimore Positive stuff all week long. We are featuring the arts, some politics. Next week, we're going to get into more healthcare issues, obviously, with the situation here, as well as sharing all sorts of good stuff out at BaltimorePositive.com. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are keeping calm. We are staying local, and we are, like my sweatshirt says, Baltimore Positive.